You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. Today we are going to be recapping our look at Damon Lindelof as a movie writer. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And we're just going to go through all of his movies that he's written, which is both of them, and look at some upcoming movies which he has on his plate, as well as his upcoming television show, and see where he's been and where he's going and what conclusions we can draw from that work. So let's get started up with his 2011 debut screenplay, Cowboys and Aliens. As far as I'm concerned with Cowboys and Aliens, there's a lot of missed potential there. You know, I know that you were not very optimistic about the concept of the film, but I think the way that the concept was sold to us and the people who were doing the selling really got me excited about the movie, and when it failed to live up to the standards of their previous work, I was disappointed.
I wouldn't say that I wasn't optimistic. I would say that I thought, yeah, that'll be a movie that lives up to its title. And by that I mean it'll be a movie that has cowboys and aliens in it.
Okay. Now what if there was a movie that came out that was just called Aliens?
I assume that there at some point there'd be aliens.
What I'm trying to get at here is...
You're saying that
do you not also assume that there may be something more to it than that?
Why would you assume that there's more?
Because it's a movie.
Aliens defies the expectation of being a simple movie about aliens. It does that by doing a lot of different things amazingly well. All right, and I remember hearing like a million years ago, like in some interview somewhere, like Damon Wayans said something along the lines of like, in Hollywood, you regularly say things like, "It's the little rascals meets Die Hard," and I remember thinking, no, I would watch that movie, and at the same time, I thought that is pretty much exactly how I imagine all of these things happen.
Yeah,
most of these things happen exactly that way, and the idea that it ever becomes more than that is kind of impressive, but it is the exception.
But I mean, it doesn't mean that it can't transcend above its title, just like Alien and Aliens did. And you know,
it does mean that when it does, it's an exception.
I assumed that this would be one of those instances. Well, let's move on to Lindelof's second film and his last film thus far, which came in 2012, and mm-hmm. that was Prometheus.
Prometheus,
obviously being the prequel to Alien, directed by Ridley Scott.
It almost isn't a prequel, since it sort of just happens beforehand, but doesn't really involve anything.
Mm-hmm. Which I think was kind of the idea.
Yeah, kind of a dumb idea.
Actually, I like that idea quite a bit.
I think I like the idea of doing an original thing. If you're going to be doing a story that doesn't directly deal with the characters or the situations or the themes... I mean, Prometheus is so fundamentally different from Alien, it doesn't really connect in any thematic or textual way. Doing an original thing actually makes a lot more sense.
I think that there's something about expanding on preconceived continuities and you know, spinning things in different directions and you know, there being some sort of subtext there with the fact that it does take place in the Alien universe.
There's nothing wrong with that, except, I mean, if you've ever been in a comic book store, and I know you have, they've been doing that for decades.
Sure, you know, and this is a cool idea. I mean, I like it. It works.
If you're going to do it, you got to do it in an exceptionally well way. I mean, you got to do it. You got to nail it. You got to do it perfect. And they didn't do it. I mean, that's simply all there is. I mean, one of the best things about the Alien comics is that there are so many side stories, so many parallel things, that there are multiple overlapping and sometimes mutually exclusive concepts. And when you have something like Prometheus, it's one giant monolithic, mutually exclusive concept. That's a problem.
I didn't really have a big problem with the movie. I actually liked the movie quite a bit. It doesn't hold up as well as I had hoped.
I listened to the Prometheus commentary with Damon Lindelof,
mm-hmm.
and he, on a number of occasions, refers to the aliens as xenomorphs.
Mm-hmm.
That's unforgivable. If you're writing a science fiction movie, you should know that xenomorph does not mean those black aliens in the movie Alien.
Perhaps he does know that. Perhaps he was just using the same shorthand that every other person who talks about Alien uses, you know, and called them xenomorphs because he knew that people would know what they were talking about.
The thing is, anyone who does that is perpetuating a significant problem. And that problem is very serious because it's a word. It's not a name. And when you pervert a word into a name, you destroy the word. And the word is more important than the name. I'm sorry, I don't care how much Aliens is fantastic, and I think it's basically a perfect movie. It does not support the destruction of a perfectly good word. The words are more important than the movie Aliens. I would let Aliens die if it meant having the word xenomorph purified.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Aside from his usage of the word xenomorph, is there any other stuff which you gathered from his commentary?
Most of it is following the leader. I got the distinct impression that he was going with the flow. He was doing what Ridley Scott told him to do. But the commentary is recorded before it was released.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to hear a commentary afterwards.
Yeah.
Where he responds to all the various criticisms.
There was actually a story which came out recently about how, you know, Prometheus 2 is in the works, and Damon Lindelof is not involved in it, and apparently he had conceived it as a trilogy. It was a standalone movie, which he then said we could convert this into a trilogy, which gave it sort of an open ending, which apparently didn't really exist in the original John Spates script. Is he on the, he's on that commentary as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does he have to say about it? Spates being the guy who wrote the script that Lindelof rewrote.
There's no, like, at a certain point, you know, Ridley Scott was like, you suck, get off this project. But he does indicate that there was a point where he was, like, he wasn't giving Ridley Scott what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, they went with a different screenwriter. And he says it in a way that makes it sound like it was no big deal. And I imagine that's because it probably happens a lot.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, hearing both of those screenwriters, I feel that neither one of them should have been involved in a science fiction movie.
I know Ridley Scott did a commentary on there. Was he on there with them?
No one was in the room.
Okay, but did you hear Ridley Scott's
yes.
commentary as well?
Yes.
So you've got these three people, Ridley Scott being, you know, sort of like the guy who is overseeing these scripts, and then the two people who wrote the scripts.
Yeah.
And I know that you have some major problems with this movie in terms of the problems that you have with it. Who do you feel, based on hearing all three of these people talk, who do you feel is responsible for contributing the elements to the script which you did not like?
I would say Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott.
But I also feel that it is the responsibility of a smart person working on a science fiction movie to say, hello, director person, I know that you want to make this movie, and this idea you have is perfectly reasonable, but we have to include some sort of explanation here. Because this thing that you want to put on screen is stupid. And if you want to put this stupid thing on screen, we have to explain why this stupid thing is on screen. You know, like Space Cobra. Okay. I know, let's poke it with a stick.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And of course, nobody's doing that. And in the commentary by Ridley Scott, there's, it really feels to me like Ridley Scott spent the entire movie like drawing a picture of a thing and said, "Write me a scene that has this in it." Mm-hmm. And the writer was like, "Yeah, yeah, I got an idea. What if we cut to that shot?"
Okay,
and let some people walk in a frame. And Ridley Scott's like, "That's solid gold. Write that down."
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I did enjoy the movie quite a bit. I still do. I don't have as much enthusiasm as I had for it the first time I watched it, but I think a lot of that might be just going into it so amped to see it, you know? I mean, like, I remember seeing that trailer and just thinking, like, oh my God, this is happening. You know, this is something that I've dreamt of for years. And
A non-prequel alien prequel.
Well, I've dreamt of an alien movie that I can take seriously, and I really haven't been able to do that since I started watching alien movies. You know, part of that comes from these expectations and sort of more than expectation, anticipations, you know, which revolve around the hype machine, in a sense. And I know that this isn't something which you fall prey to, but it is totally something which I fall prey to, and it's actually something which Damon Lindelof and company have worked hard to sort of take back, you know. And that's oversharing of information about movies prior to their release. So kind of looking ahead now, Damon Lindelof in his post-Prometheus career now, where he has a bit more control over things, and also just because of the people who he's associated with, he's trying to control information. You know, he's got his own mystery boxes and whatnot, just like J.J. Abrams.
I don't get this. Doesn't Quentin Tarantino let anyone see his scripts?
I think, you know, the idea, I mean, the thing that they've talked about and Lindelof has talked about is it's not so much about, like, keeping big surprises like Spock dies, you know, or, you know, Darth Vader is Luke's father.
You just said that Spock dies.
Okay, sorry.
It will happen.
Spoilers. I think what he's talking about is more along the lines of what I'm talking about, which is...
not overexposing it.
Right. Preserving the experience of watching it for the first time.
Yeah. You know? And I don't agree that that's important.
It may be important, may not be important, but it's an element of showmanship, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't agree with that. That's a terrible idea. People who make art should not be concerned with being showmen.
Well, I mean, they're art and
showmen.
Showmen.
I guess you can pluralize it.
They're artists and showmen, though. That's what they are. That's what filmmakers are.
No, marketers are showmen.
No, I think filmmakers are too.
People who make movies should not be showmen.
I think that's a big part of it. Anyway, Star Trek Into Darkness is the next movie written by Damon Lindelof, which is coming out, and that'll be out next month. I mean, are you at all excited or intrigued or anything about it?
I'm not of those words. I guess curious? It's not like any sort of curiosity about the thing, really, because I don't really think that it's going to be mind-blowing in any way. I'm curious about the idea of J.J. Abrams doing a sequel, because I haven't really seen that yet. And there is a thing about
sequels. Well, not a sequel to his own movie.
You're saying Mission Impossible 3 is a sequel?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Okay, whatever. Go ahead. Anyway.
Okay, I'm saying that sequels are tricky. And I don't think that many people have been able to accomplish them well. And I don't know. I definitely don't think that J.J. Abrams has Cameron's savant-like ability to... I said Cameron. Cameron's savant-like ability to make perfect sequels. So I'm curious as to how he handles this. But I don't anticipate being... shocked or dismayed, which I guess is sort of the J.J. Abrams thing. It's sort of like I anticipate it being watchable.
Do you think it will be better or worse than Star Trek 09?
I can't see it being better.
Interesting.
I also can't really see it being worse. That's sort of the tricky thing. I can't really see it being qualitatively different from the first one.
Well, a month after Star Trek Into Darkness, there's going to be another movie coming out, which Lindelof at least had a hand in writing, although I don't believe he's actually credited for the screenplay, and that's World War Z. That's directed by Mark Forster, the guy who made...
And 107 other people who were forced to come in and fix the movie.
Mark Forster directed... Quantum of Solace, as well as things like Monsters Ball and Finding Neverland. So World War Z is an adaptation of Max Brooks's novel. Did you read World War Z?
I'm going to take issue with the term novel. It's an epistolary novel, but it's an epistolary novel where every single communication, every letter, every snippet of information communicated from one person to another, or, you know, a person to a database, every one of those is, like, completely removed. There are some, like, that repeat, like, some characters that make the same ones, but it's so disconnected. It's so, like, you know, constellatory that the idea of making a movie out of it, it's kind of bizarre. If you made a movie out of that was, like, faithful to the material, it would be an incomprehensible mess documentary.
Okay, so people complain, because all I've heard is, like, people looking at the trailers and stuff and saying, like, this is nothing like the book. So this sounds to me like that's kind of an unfair criticism, because it sounds like you have to make it something which is not like the book. You need to...
I don't agree. I think that one of the best things about the idea of an adaptation is exploiting the differences in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And like Fast Food Nation. Yeah. You know, like, there's a book and a movie that couldn't be more different. And in some ways, I think the criticism of a movie is that in that instance, what they did was they took a book that was dense and packed with information and tons of stuff, and it was really interesting, and it was a compelling read despite being about food and economics, and they turned it into a narrative.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, well, yeah, obviously. It's sort of the obvious choice to adapt a book into a narrative. So the criticism of World War Z as, like, oh, it's not like the book. I think what they're criticizing is, the book is weird.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't the movie be weird?
Okay, all right. Well, have you seen the trailers and everything?
I saw something.
Yeah.
A while ago?
And what was your reaction as someone who has read the book, comparing it to the source material? Did you like the book?
No.
Okay.
Don't get me started on next books.
Okay.
When I saw the trailer, I was like, I kind of remember that. Because the book came out long ago.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw the trailer, like, there was an avalanche of zombies. Mm-hmm. A tidal wave of zombies, and the zombies were forming, like, ladders, like ants,
mm-hmm.
in Crystal Skull. Really crazy stuff with zombies, and I was like, "That's a weird choice."
Yeah,
it's not really so much in the book.
Yeah, I mean, like, I look at the trailer.
As far as I remember, it might be
okay. I look at the trailer as someone who has not read the book, and I think that's a weird choice. But I don't really see the hatred. You know, I think that it could be a perfectly fine movie. Yeah,
I agree. I don't see the hatred. I don't see that. Ultimately, if you read World War Z and you were like, oh man, I can't wait for them to make this in a movie, you're a weird person. Because that is not really a story. And what's there isn't super awesome.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I don't think that he's credited. You know, reading about it, it looks like the original screenplay was written by J. Michael Straczynski of Babylon 5.
J. Strank.
Who wrote an adaptation which was, it says, like, fairly close to the source material. And then he was rewritten by Matthew Michael Carnahan.
What?
Who has written, amongst other things, The Kingdom, which is a very good movie.
And other stuff that's not so good.
Smoking Aces, which I think is an okay thing. The Gray, which was not... Did he write The Gray? I think he might have.
I haven't even seen The Gray. I don't even know. All I know about The Gray is what you've told me about The Gray.
It's not good. But he wrote The Kingdom, and The Kingdom was amazing.
The Kingdom was really good.
And it was then rewritten by Lindelof. But if you look at the credits on IMDb, the credited writer is Matthew Michael Carnahan.
Mm-hmm.
So take that as you will. We shall see.
Carna in his name. Sounds very meaty.
Yeah. But there is another movie which Lindelof has in the works for next year, which has gotten a lot of buzz, and that's a movie called Tomorrowland.
Mm-hmm. More like Lindelon.
I don't know what that means.
As opposed to Lindelof.
Okay, all right.
Because he's really on.
Okay.
He's got a lot of projects in the works.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing the Variety would do.
Gotcha.
Because they're terrible people.
Gotcha. It's this movie, Tomorrowland, is being directed by Brad Bird. I guess he's also co-writing now.
Mm-hmm.
Who, of course, Brad Bird directed Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, and The Iron Giant, and
Ghost
The
Protes.
Incredibles.
And a bunch of Simpsons.
Ratatouille and a bunch of Simpsons. And it is one of those stories in very typical Lindelof fashion, which people don't really know much about, but there's a ton of speculation about it. It was originally called 1952 as like a working title. It's been done in absolute secrecy over at Disney.
It's a sequel to 1941.
A lot of people thought it was going to be a cover for Star Wars Episode 7.
That's a prequel to 2001.
That turned out not to be the case. They've been playing with people. They released pictures of a box.
Fits into 7 continuity.
A box, which Lindelof was apparently given by an executive over at Disney, which had a bunch of things in it with like old pictures,
toenails, comic doll books, heads,
comic books, film reels. It looks like a lot of weird things, and apparently the contents of this box were used as the inspiration for this movie. There was a Disney historian who was suspecting that it might
feed us in a jar.
That it might be. A resurrection of a story about the government investigating the possibility of UFOs, which is something that I guess Disney had been working on back in the 50s as a potential movie. That doesn't seem to be the case. The latest theory here is...
Why are we reading theories?
Well, I mean, it's something which is supposed to be like a probable plot synopsis, I guess. You know, it's a mystery box. It's a mystery box. We're trying to uncover these clues and
dig. I'm not. Find. Well, I don't think there's any fruit in this.
Well, here's what the potentially...
The hypothetically potential things.
Yeah,
that will occur synopsis. Theoretically in the hypothetical movie.
This is what's supposedly the real synopsis.
Supposedly the real synopsis.
And that's the way these guys work, you know?
Well, that's why you don't play their game.
Well, just listen to this idea and tell me what you think.
Okay.
A teenage girl, a genius middle-aged man who was kicked out of Tomorrowland, and a prepubescent girl robot attempt to get to
this
and unravel.
This is a porn.
Attempt... to get to and unravel what happened to Tomorrowland, which exists
porn.
In an alternative dimension in order to save Earth. It's going to star George Clooney and Hugh Laurie. You know, some more speculation is that, like, Hugh Laurie is a mad scientist who creates this world in an alternate dimension, and George Clooney wants to go there, but he won't let him, and now he's going back there, and he's trying to save the world. It's supposed to be, like, high sci-fi... You know, stuff.
High is the word.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to tie into...
Because it's also the requirement.
I don't know if it's going to tie into, Disneyland's Tomorrowland, the Tomorrowland of the Magic Kingdom.
Yes.
I really hope that Space Mountain shows up at some point. I don't
Tomorrowland
know.
Tomorrowland of the Magic... Yeah, the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, but it's bizarre. Are you looking forward to it? I mean...
Oh, man!
You got Brad Pitt involved?
I can't wait for those action figures.
Well, they've talked about that. They've talked about how this is, potentially a big sci-fi, multi-platform.
No, I'm joking. Please don't do that.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it just because it's Brad Bird and Damon Lindelof, and it's like, hey, let's see what those guys...
I need to see evidence that any of this is real. Okay. I don't want to play the speculation.
Well, the pictures of the box are real. They were posted by Brad Bird.
I don't doubt that a box exists.
Uh-huh.
Here's the thing about me. If you tell me a story where a guy has a box, I'm inclined to believe that story is real because it doesn't involve anything really, really, really bizarre. Or, the expenditure of millions of dollars on a story about Hugh Laurie creating a parallel universe and a little girl robot.
Yeah.
It's small wonder meets a wrinkle in time.
Yeah.
That's not a good idea.
Well, it looks like after Tomorrowland, Damon Lindelof is doing what you suggested he should do in Cowboys and Aliens, which is return to the world of television. He's got a new show which he's currently developing for HBO, which is based on a book by Tom Parada called The Leftovers. Tom Parada is an author who's written things like Election and Little Children. I've never read any of his books, but I've seen both of those movies, and I liked them both quite a bit. And this one is essentially sounds kind of like Left Behind. It takes place after the rapture happens, but not quite like it's supposed to. It is the story of the people who didn't make the cut and a world that will never be the same.
Awesome.
Lindelof is co-writing the script with Parada, and it's been picked up for a pilot. And, you know, Lindelof says, "What I love about television is character-based storytelling, and I want to continue to explore a fantastical way of doing it where the characters live in a world that is a little skewed." But he was quick to point out that I won't be the one that would come up with the next Lost. I won't be the one that would come up with the next Lost. I don't know what that sentence means.
What he's saying is that the next time somebody makes a show like Lost, he's not going to be one that makes that show.
Adding that he has no interest in doing more shows with wackadoo mythology. Parada.
Maybe the lesson is to not do wackadoo mythology. Maybe it's not so much about mythology as it is about the wackadoo.
Okay. All right. Well, regardless, he's actually getting back to TV on HBO. It's not TV. It's HBO.
It's HBO-lavision.
So, I don't know. It sounds like kind of an interesting thing. He's talked about how thematically it's got some ties to Lost and whatnot.
Thematically, it's got some ties to Lost. Does it fit into the Lost continuity? Probably. Almost everything does.
Yeah. You know, he said
Once Upon a Time does.
So, does it? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So does Chuck. And Flash Forward.
Which means the Flash Forward fits into Once Upon a Time continuity, which means that Frankenstein could come on to Chuck and then see his future.
And, of course,
Frankenstein's on the show.
Die Hard fits in there, too.
Frankenstein could save Die Hard from the aliens and in the future when he meets the aliens.
Do they have Slesho in Lost? They must, right?
I don't remember. I don't know. You know what?
And if it
somebody
does,
else pointed out Slesho, and they were like, "Slesho's in a bunch of stuff." Never noticed it.
Okay.
I noticed Oceanic Airlines every time it comes up.
Yeah. Assuming that they do have Slesho in Lost, which only makes sense, and that means it also fits into Star Trek continuity and Cloverfield continuity. And Super 8 continuity and
right, which means the characters continuity on Fringe are aware of the future and, right, and the characters of Star Trek. At some point, they gotta just admit that there was a TV show called Star Trek that bears an eerie and uncanny resemblance to their actual lives.
Yeah. Well, regardless, that's what Lindelof's got in the future. Any final thoughts on Damon Lindelof and his movie writing career?
I really hope that he has not yet found his groove.
Okay.
And I really hope that he has not lost it and has to get it back at some point.
Okay.
I really want him to still be trying to find it so that when he finds it, you know, we get movies that are better than Prometheus. Because I don't think Prometheus is his fault. And I don't think Cowboys and Aliens is a problem. I think that both of those are him doing his job.
Yeah,
which is frustratingly marginal when you're getting started as a screenwriter.
Yeah,
and so I feel bad for us.
Yeah,
and I hope that he's able to do some stuff that will actually work. And I actually think that his creativity that he showed and he exemplified on Lost would actually benefit greatly from somebody with discipline. From a very disciplined director. And I would have thought, swear to God, I thought that was Ridley Scott. Mm-hmm. That turned out to not be the case.
Maybe Brad Bird?
Brad Bird, I think, is probably a much better choice.
Yeah.
But I just don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen enough from Brad Bird outside of The Simpsons. And I think he's good at a lot of things. I don't know about honing a story. I think that Brad Bird might have the exact same problem Lindelof has, where he needs somebody else to be the disciplined one, to rein in.
Oh, Incredibles Ratatouille. Those were his originals.
Those are, but that's Pixar. That's where they've got 10,000 people like saying, that seems a little dumb.
Iron Giant?
I don't know about Iron Giant. Iron Giant is actually kind of like Spartan. Mm. It feels sort of like engineered out of the components that they had available.
Well, I still think it works pretty well. I don't know.
No, I'm not saying that it doesn't. I'm saying that it's, you know, it has the Jaws effect where the limitations inform the quality of the piece.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, you know, even though Lindelof's movie track record is, you know, I would say 50-50 with Cowboys and Aliens and Prometheus, I am, you know, very much looking forward to him teaming up with Kurtzman and Orsi on Into Darkness. And I think that Tomorrowland will be a really interesting look at what a Lindelof movie is like under normal circumstances, without any sort of, you know, script doctoring or tampering or anything, collaboration sort of issues. You know, I think this is where we'll get to see, you know, what a Lindelof movie is really like.
I don't think so. I think that as long as he's going to be dealing with somebody else directing it, he's going to have problems.
Well, I mean, that could be
it. That's why I think he belongs in TV.
That could be, you know, and we'll see what The Leftovers is like as well. So I guess that's pretty much it for today. As always, you can find us on our other show at commentarytrackstars.com. You can also find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars or email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. You can also visit the Trek FM forums and give us feedback there. We do appreciate your feedback. And go to iTunes or something. Apparently, that's a big deal. Go to iTunes and leave a review. Right now, we only have one review, and it's from someone who's kind of our boss, so I don't think it really counts. So that's it for Damon Lindelof. That wraps up our series, our brief series on him. We will be back next week with an even briefer series on Brandon Braga.